I first became aware of him when I was a kid and growing up in Chicago in the western suburbs during the 60s. I was aware that he was the first black coach in Major League Baseball history and then went on to become a scout for the Cubs. My consciousness regarding his presence again became reignited after the baseball strike in 1994. Ken Burns came out with his landmark PBS series on baseball, and that pretty much put Buck O'Neill back in the national spotlight as the singular spokesperson for the Negro Leagues to tell this forgotten story that had to get out there.
You went to Cooperstown with the unveiling of the statue, and talk about getting that put together.
Buck O'Neill, I spent a lot of time with him before he died. He was a big proponent of my Chicago Baseball Museum project because besides Kansas City, where the Negro League Museum resides, Chicago was the other spiritual home for the Negro Leagues because of the founding Negro Leagues with Rube Foster, and also the fact that Chicago was also the site of the East-West game at Old Comiskey Park from 1933 to 1960, which was the epicenter of black America during the summer. A gentleman from the Chicago Tribune, who runs their media division and video division, John Owens, and I teamed up on this Buck O'Neill project. He was the filmmaker and wrote most of the script, and I was the executive producer. We put together this film in 2008. What we used was just before Buck died in 2006, John had shot one of the last interviews with Buck O'Neill talking about his life, about the Negro Leagues, about segregation and what baseball helped change that. And we really thought that we had something special to build around. We used that interview, and that was around the time where Buck O'Neill was getting a lot of attention because he had lost the Hall of Fame vote. There was a special vote in 2006 to elect Negro League stars and executives of the past, and he'd missed by one vote, and 17 others in the past got in. And I think the biggest thing that came out of that was, you know, despite the fact Buck O'Neill really wanted this, he took it with an amazing sense of humility and sort of a lesson for all of us how to deal with bad news and go on. And I think the best lesson that was significant in this was the fact that just before he died in 2006, he went to Cooperstown and did the induction speech for these 17 people. And I think that showed a lot of courage, class. Major League Baseball obviously was somewhat embarrassed, I think, by the fact that this very charismatic character had been passed over, and they wanted to do something very special for him. And so they came up with the most special honoration that's ever been done at Cooperstown to come up with a Lifetime Achievement Award specifically named after him, and he would be the first recipient.
Does it seem odd? We've got this Lifetime Award, and there's a big statue, yet it seems unlikely that anybody else that's that prominently featured in the Hall of Fame is not an inductee.
Well, that's correct. He is probably has the most presence of any individual who's not an inductee, who doesn't have his plaque in the wall. I almost think it's almost a better honor because it's one of the first things you see when you get into the Hall of Fame is Buck's statue in front of a beautiful glass cabinet that displays his life. And for Cubs fans, they'll really like it because it has a big, beautiful mural of Wrigley Field behind the statue. So I think that kind of that greeting, the initial greeting when you go into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown and having that recognition puts him in a special category.
Well, and you know, segregation is a horrible thing, see? But this is why I wrote that book. I was right on time. Had I been earlier, I wouldn't have met, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have played against Beirut, Bobby Feller. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known Josh Gibson. Played with Satchel Paige. I wouldn't have known Cool Papa Bell. You understand? I was right on time. And as far as the segregation going to Major League, that didn't bother me that much because, you know what I figured? We were playing the best baseball that was played in this country.
I think there was a lot of similarities between him and Martin Luther King as far as their charisma, their personalities, their command of audiences, and the way that they interacted with a person and made them feel like they were the only person in the world when he was talking to.
There's probably a lot of people that don't realize how many careers he developed. I mean, Ernie Banks and then going all the way to guys like Lee Smith and Joe Carter.
He had a significant impact on the Chicago Cubs organization with drafting several African-American future stars and Hall of Famers. You mentioned Ernie Banks. He recounts in the film how Ernie Banks used to be shy, and sort of his role was to sort of help bring Ernie along to be a little more social. I think that lesson was successful. But I think he had the two biggest impacts on careers was Billy Williams and then Lou Brock. We're going to do an expanded director's cut of the film where I did some additional interviews with Lou Brock and also with Lee Smith that talked about their impact.
And lastly, I wanted to just ask about the efforts behind the museum. We've talked about this a few years ago. What's going on now?
Well, we're still looking for a bricks and mortar facility. We in 2009, we had been awarded a large grant, part of the capital fund, and we ended up giving that back because the location wasn't right. You know, we have assembled a good board of directors. We're looking at a couple different locations. You know, right now, obviously, in this economy, it's very difficult for non-for-profits for fundraising. But we do a lot of events like the Buck O'Neill. We have an online presence, and we have a newsletter on a monthly basis. And so, you know, it's a vibrant organization. And we also spent a lot of time acquiring a lot of artifacts. And the biggest thing we acquired was the personal collection and papers of Jerome Holtzman, the first Major League Baseball historian. That was a major undertaking and project. So we got a good foundation. And I remind people it took about 13 years for the Lincoln Museum to go from concept to opening up. I don't want to be that long. But I feel we've gotten some momentum. And the projects like the Buck O'Neill film, which I showed at last year's Baseball Hall of Fame Film Festival, I think speak to the quality and the history of what we're trying to do with the museum project.